Welcome to the RC3.
Hello and welcome on the Franconian.net stage. We now have the pleasure to present the next talk called Fathers Like Lego, held by Andrea and Dominic. They both are developers for AFL++ and they are creating a new fuzzing library. If you are new to it, fuzzing means to randomly input data into a program until it starts to crash. From there on, the input data will be changed to trigger more crashes or specific behavior. Have fun.
Welcome to our talk, Fathers Like Lego. We, that's Andrea Fioraldi and me, Dominic Meyer, are going to talk a bit about building blocks today. Not like these, we all know that Congress loves Legos, but we're going to talk about how software, and specifically fuzzers, an automated scheme to test software for security vulnerabilities, can be built and bricked together. So, first, let me introduce ourselves. We're both academics doing our PhDs at universities around Europe, and we both play CTF, and we're both part of the AFL++ team. For whoever is not really familiar with fuzzing, AFL is one of the most well-known fuzzers around, and AFL++ is a fork that is maintained by a group of four people, us two and Mark and Heiko. We managed to increase the fuzzing performance, overall performance, execution speed, and also just path finding and bug finding over the course of the last 1.5 years pretty dramatically. Here you can see the FuzzBench experiment summary. So FuzzBench is a pretty good offering by Google, giving fuzzer authors the possibility to test their fuzzers against real targets. And here you can see AFL++ 268C in comparison to AFL++ 3.0, which is the latest version and which is pretty advanced in comparison to the old school AFL when at the time we forked it. So yeah, would we want to say that AFL++ is the best fuzzer around? Well, we get many FuzzBench points, so yeah, we have a great success here. But the truth about fuzzing is that AFL++ isn't the best fuzzer. Actually, the best fuzzer is HomeFuzz.
No.
The best fuzzer is, of course, the Frida API fuzzer, which uses Frida to fuzz.
No.
The best fuzzer is libfuzzer, which is included in a Clang project. And
no.
The best is Unicore fuzz, which can fuzz pretty much anything that you have a CPU on.
No.
The best fuzzer is Fusili, which fuzzes...
No.
No? The best fuzzer is the original. No. The best fuzzer is Domato, which is specifically for browsers.
No.
And Dom... No? Okay. Hmm. Well, then... I know. Usually the best fuzzer is your custom fuzzer, which is tuned for that specific use case and adapted to your specific needs. So it may come with custom mutations that are only useful for, you know, weird XML dialects of your target, or, you know, there's no off-the-shelf fuzzer for this specific weird architectural thing that you try to fuzz. Well, that leaves us with a bit of a problem here, because if I can't use an off-the-shelf fuzzer, how would I create a fuzzer? Well, the usual way is to just fork an existing fuzzer. That's why we have a lot of AFL forks out there. Yes, I know it's funny coming from a guy who just told you all about their awesome AFL fork, but it's true. We try, our AFL++ fork actually tries to incorporate many of these, but of course, it's impossible to incorporate all of them. Well, the other way is you can create a whole fuzzer from scratch, which, you know, of course, works, but that way you don't reuse any existing code. You will have to spend a lot of time just like doing basic engineering things. You adopt different techniques from different fuzzers. You have to, you know, stalk GitHub. You reinvent the wheel. And in the end, you will end up with a more naive design. So getting to the point of specialization and to like a performance of, you know, something like AFL, AFL++, or HomeFuzz, it takes a lot of engineering effort. And for like a weird target, you are not going to put that much effort into it. And then lastly, you will not be able to just take your one core fuzzer and scale it to many cores and many machines with ease without even more additional engineering. So, I mean, it's in the title of the talk already, but how would you go about building something that's reusable? Well, our solution is a fuzzing library. Our goal is it to build a library that can be used to develop custom fuzzers quickly and easily. The library offers you basic blocks that can be put together to a proper working fuzzer, and each of these blocks can be exchanged, can be amended. The community can add their own blocks, and you can then put the perfect fuzzer for your target together with not too many lines of code. Now we're gonna go through each of these components in fine details. Andrea?
In the following part of this talk, we'll present the concept that we define to abstract the properties of fuzzers. We will give some example, very simple example that related to fuzzers that you should already know, like FL, fuzzer, and so on. So we relate this abstraction to some possible implementation. We will show some bits of these entities translated to code, that is Rust in our case, and we hope that the community will profit and learn about this new vision of fuzzing as building blocks. And all these parts should be swappable, can be replaced without any kind of problems with the other parts. So if, for instance, you can define a new type of mutator, swap it with the pre-existing mutator, and all the other stuff works without problems with your new mutator. The first component that we will discuss is the observation channel, or observer as an abbreviation, that is the entity that provides some information about a specific run of the target. This information lives inside the target. They are usually read-only, so just the fuzzer doesn't use observation channel to instruct the target. The fuzzer just observe, so it's a passive channel. And it is usually deterministic, but not in all the cases. A very, very straightforward example that you for sure will know is the FL observation channel, that is a map in a shared memory that logs in each bucket that represents an edge in the control flow graph, the number of execution of such edges in the current execution of the program. Another very simple observation channel used by off-the-shelf fuzzer is the execution time, when the test case is fed to the target and the target is run. Fuzzer measure time, typically in milliseconds, and know for each test case how much time is needed to execute it. But apart this very common type of observation that fuzzer does about targets, as the spirit of the library is fully abstract, you can define, for instance, a new type of observation, like in this case, reachability or the program point. You define the code, a target program point, and the observation, the data of the observation challenge channel is just a boolean that says yes or no if the current run reached this target program point. We discussed the observation channels that are deeply connected with the target and the data live inside the target we saved, but how we can instruct the target about doing something. And the component for this purpose is the executor that basically instructs the target about the current input and run the iteration, run a fuzz case, runs the target with the given input. For instance, if your target runs inside an emulator, the executor will place the input in a determined area of the memory in the emulator and start the execution of the emulator to run the target with the given input. This is just an example. The executor is deeply associated with the observation channel. In our design, they are even contained inside the executor. And a possible example, the most simple example of executor comes from libfuzzer, is the in-memory executor, that in which the input is just passed as an argument to an harness function, and the execution of the target program is just the execution of this function. It is the most simple possible executor that we can imagine. Another more complex example that you know is the fork server of the FL, that is a more complex mechanism to control the target using inter-process communication pipeline between two processes. That one is the fuzzer. There is an intermediate process that is a copy of the target, that each time that the fuzzer requests a new execution using the pipe, fork itself in the target child, that is the actual real target process that is fuzzed. And when the target child exits, is communicated again to the intermediate fork server that communicates the outcome using another pipe to the fuzzer. So there is the double indirection executor in FL. Now we discuss the feedback entity that is the entity that manages to handle the data inside the observation channels. The main purpose of feedbacks is to produce a fitness value that say if the state of the observation channels are interesting, that means that the test case that is related to the last execution of the executor is interesting, that means that it can be added to the corpus of the fuzzer. This corpus is evolved during the fuzzing algorithm. It's, for instance, used for mutations and so on. So it's a score. Again, it's a function with a state that assigns a score to the executions. And if the score is okay, the test case is added to this corpus. A very straightforward example of feedback is the one that is used in almost all the off-the-shelf fuzzer, that is the maximization map. There is a map, like the map that you see in the map observer, but it is inside the fuzzer this time. It is a history map that keeps track of the maximum values seen so far in all the cumulative observations made in all the executions. In a test case, is defined as interesting when the state of the map observation channel is as an entry that has a value that is greater than the corresponding entry in the history map in the feedback. When this happens, the entries in the feedback is also updated, so it's always the state of the feedback is always evolving. A very simple usage of the maximization map is to maximize the coverage, the number of the execution of the edges in FL, for instance. The code is very similar to this one. If there is an entry that is greater in the observation channel that is greater than the one in the history map is updated and the fitness is increased. But the very same feedback, so very same code, very same implementation can be used to do a very different job that will result in a very different outcome of the fuzzer, but changing a very few lines of code in the target. to report, instead of the number of the distribution of the edges, the size of the allocations, for instance, in one of the possible usage of a maximization map, as we want to maximize the size of mallocs to spot out-of-memory bugs, for instance. Now, fuzzing as an objective that in most of the cases to find violation of some requirements, like crashes, timeouts, violation of some invariants of the program, and so on. But as we like abstraction, we define the objective of the fuzzer as a set of objective feedbacks that are just feedbacks that are just like the normal feedbacks that we discussed, but that provide an interesting result to add the test case not to the corpus that you use in the fuzzer for the evolution of the state of the fuzzer, but in the objective corpus, that is the corpus that is not used anymore by the fuzzer, it's just for the user that they say, in this set of test cases, there are test cases that comply with your definition of objective for the fuzzer. For instance, in this objective corpus, there are the test cases that crash the application in the normal case. Or in a more strange case, we reuse again the example of reachability. We can define the reaching of a specific program point as an objective of the fuzzer. And so, for instance, we can start fuzzing with an invalid input, put a reachability condition in a portion of the code that we know is reached only with a valid input. And so, in the end, in the objective corpus, we will have all valid test cases for the output. A very important entity, of course, in fuzzing, it is the input that we define not as the input that is expected by the target, but as the input that is used inside the fuzzer. What this means that the input is the structure that the fuzzer expects to easily manipulate the input, this structure, and then communicate the target an input also with another format. For instance, if we define an input as a structure with fields and enums and so on, maybe the target expects a byte array. The fuzzer can easily manipulate this struct inside the code, but then when in the executor we instruct the target about the input, we serialize this input structure. A complex example of input can be the abstract syntax tree. Imagine a grammar-based fuzzer, and we store these test cases as a tree, not byte arrays. Then maybe the target we expect a byte array, but inside the fuzzer we manipulate the tree with three operations, so I can link and append and so on. For instance, in a mutator, we can swap nodes and so on. And when the input must be put inside the target, it is serialized to the format that is expected by the target. Another component is the corpus. We discussed about it already. We talked about it as a set of test cases, but it's not just a set of test cases. In our model, a corpus is the place in which there are stored interesting inputs and their metadata. What are metadata? Metadata are all the information that are not internal of the input, like the execution time, the new entries of the coverage map that are discovered the first time that this case was added to the corpus, and so on. So these properties are related to the test case that is in the corpus and just to the test case in this corpus. They are external, so they cannot be stored in the input structure. But the definition of corpus doesn't end here, because it defines also a policy about how the fuzzer should request test case to the corpus. The fuzzer, each iteration, requests a test case from the corpus, and the most naive implementation of this policy is a random policy. When the fuzzer requests a test case, the corpus gives a random test case. But you can also fog up the Athel approach, and each time that a fuzzer you get a test case, you can serve a test case with a first-in, first-out approach using a queue, and so on. The mutator component, of course, is very important because it's the most used way to generate inputs in feedback-driven fuzzing. And the definition is very simple. One or more tech inputs are taken and a new derived input is generated. It can be very simple, just one mutation, a bit flip, or complex with like a scheduler mutator that apply multiple mutation and also have some scheduling policies that can be defined to apply this mutation. And the two policies can be how many mutations the mutator should apply each run, and which mutation it should apply. In a basic fuzzers like FL, these policies are random, but in more advanced solutions like MOPT, scheduling algorithms can be applied, like in MOPT, which mutation is selected using an history of the effectiveness of each mutation. And so mutations that lead to interesting inputs have more priority in the selection of mutation. Deeply connected to the mutator, there is the generator that generates inputs, this time from scratch, and takes inputs on parameters, for instance, the probability to expand some rule in a grammar when generating a test case from scratch using a grammar. Generators are used to generate the initial corpus in case in which the user doesn't provide the fuzzer with an initial corpus or part of the mutator as a mutation. You generate from scratch a part of the input, not just the entire input, and so on. In some strange cases, it can be used also as a post-process step in fuzzing. You evolve not a real input representation, but a set of probabilities, and before sending the input to the target, there is a post-process stage that generates the actual input, taking this set of probabilities as parameter. The most simple policy to generate an input can be a random array with some other requirements like just printable bytes and so on, or even complex generators like grammar-based generators that are used, for instance, in Nautilus, also to mutate inputs, because one of the possible mutations on Nautilus is to take a node in the input, replace it with a new generated separate tree from scratch. So the mutator uses itself a generator as a mutation. A very abstract component also is the stage, that is defined as the entity that operates an option on a single test case, that is can mean all, of course, nothing, is not explained. The idea is that the fuzzer requests a test case from the corpus each iteration, and the stages are all these actions that are applied to just this single test case that was taken from the corpus. The most simple stage that you think about in fuzzing is the mutational stage, that there is a loop, and in this loop the test case is mutated using a mutator, it is executed and it is evaluated using the feedbacks, and then if interesting added to the corpus. But it can be also more complex, you can use a scheduling algorithm to intelligently know how many iterations this loop must do. This is a very widely explored topic in literature. For instance, there are a lot of works that try to maximize the effectiveness of fuzzing, selecting this number of iterations in FL. It's called depends on the PERS score, and there are, for instance, works like FLFast that define several scheduling policies that depends, for instance, on rare portion of the codes and so on, to give more iteration to interesting input and less iteration to shallow inputs. Another example of stage is the analysis stage. That is a stage that can, for instance, execute an additional executor that performs time tracking and collect the information with observer and store this information as metadata. And then you, after that, you can, for instance, run another stage that make use of this metadata that can be, for instance, comparison values extracted from the target to do mutation, for instance. That is a common analysis stage used in fuzzers. If you know FL, another example is the trim stage that try to minimize the size of the cases while maintaining the same coverage. And so on. There are, you can define also other different type of stage like calibration and so on. Now I presented in theory what for us are the core concept, core entities behind feedback driven fuzzing in an abstract way, so they can be almost translated to code. Not so, it's more easy to say that to do, but they can. And but of course they are just theory, and to provide a real implementation, we need additional components related to the implementation that Dominic will discuss in the next slides.
Thank you, Andrea. So these additional components that are not really theoretical background of fuzzing things, but are actually needed for this library to work and for fuzzers to work. Let's take a little look at this. So in our LIGO house, there are these parts on the left. You see here already there's a display, so we need something like output for the user. You see on the very top the blue stuff, which communicates with some outside world. And then there's also internals of the screen thingy, which is the random number generator, for example. So we actually benchmarked a lot of random number generators. It makes a huge difference for execution speed, which RNG you use. Then we have, of course, you know, the state. Pretty easy to explain, right? It's the state. So it contains the corpus and the feedbacks and all entities. We had to split it up a bit, so the corpus is now like a separate thing, so it works well together with Rust. But from a core concept, you have this state, and each time you run an input, it may evolve the state and parts of the fuzzer. And then last but not least, and pretty importantly, we have an event manager. So each new event that occurs during fuzzing will be sent out during using an event manager. We have different implementations of the event manager, one of which just displays the changes to the user, which would allow for single core fuzzing, and another one which is called low-level message passing event manager, which can pump out each event, so each time a new test case is found or metadata is added to a corpus, it can pump out this event to all other nodes that are fuzzing as well. This makes it easy to scale to all cores, and in the future may even allow it, us to scale across different machines. The nice things about LLMP is that it's implemented using shared maps. So very rarely does any fuzzer instance need to go and ask the kernel for something. Usually everything is inside shared maps, and all of the nodes that are fuzzing just listen for changes on the shared maps asynchronous. So then code. Well, the initial implementations, many of these, well, we involved them a bit, but many of these concepts was done last summer by Rishi during our Google Summer of Code, FL++'s Summer of Code. And that allowed us to test out all of these ideas. However, C is just, it's showing its age, let's say, right now. So it doesn't have generics, which is pretty useful for this kind of use case. And it doesn't really allow an easy way to do object-oriented programming or any abstractions. So what we did was we rewrote the thing in C++, which is, you know, the logical next step. That leads us to a lot of virtual functions, which is slower. And then many different templating craziness to get away from the virtual functions. So here we are today talking about Rust implementation. to conclude, after a few weeks in-depth rusting, we can say that some language features are still missing, but in overall, it's more legible and still performant in comparison to C++. We looked around the Rust community and we found a pretty good keynote from RustConf 18 about game development. And the concepts we found inside this keynote, we then translated to Rust patterns for our fuzzing library. And then we ended up with a game state kind of thing, which is called the fuzzer state, which I already talked about earlier. And the fuzzer state contains feedback, executors, corpus, and stages, all the things you heard before. And then one very special unrusty Rust part is an animap. So there's the reason is that there are no real downcasts in Rust. So what we have now is a hash map that we put anything in, that hence the name animap, and we get out the type that we put in later. So that way, each part in the fuzzing pipeline, each part of the fuzzing pipeline can store and retrieve data at any point in time. And then we evolved this concept further to Haskell-like tuples with the nice benefit that access is already checked at compile time. And of course, what we really came to love is SERDE, which is the serialization and digitalization in Rust that takes a lot of effort of writing deserialization away from us. So let's go back to scaling. We saw that just spawning a single thread on the glibc will enable foo text on write, which makes fuzzing potentially slower if the target prints. So we just said, you know, we don't have any threads. We have a single process in our example implementation. And whenever an interesting test case is discovered, it's synced log-free over these shared map channels. We have a marginal serialization overhead, but afterwards, no more syncing is involved. This is pretty cool. And we even added an option, if all observers are the same for each client, we can reuse the results and we don't have to rerun the input for a target on a different fuzzer. So you can still have, you know, you can have clients that are not the same shape. So you could have one client that has, for example, additional instrumentation. In that case, you would have to rerun. But if they're exactly the same fuzzer, they will just take over the test case from the other client and go on fuzzing with the new test case. You can see here that everything on these 80 cores is green. Green means there is not much kernel involvement, which is what we strive for in fuzzing, because in AFL land, it's known that the kernel will usually slow down your fuzzing if you use it a lot. And you can also see here in this chart in the middle that we actually scale pretty well. So it's almost linear. For libpng, we have over 10 million execs on this machine per second. You are probably wondering, well, now you chose Rust, fine, but I don't like Rust. Can I only use this library if I'm a Rust person? No. So the cool thing is, this is only the core. Our libpng test harness already uses C++. We already have a version using QEMU mode, which also works. It integrates flawlessly to our, according to our tests. Plus, the library is completely no standard lib and alloc, which you know, may tell Rust people something. It basically means you can include this potentially in a kernel later, and almost all targets that any static Clang binary can be built for. The bad part is it's not done yet. We tried to finish it for the talk, but there's still some little engineering details here and there that we want to finish before we want to release it to the public. So you can already look at the old C lib, which already has the scaling aspects of it. And you can expect the Rust rewrite to come really, really soon. If you're super interested, shoot us a message. We will let you know as soon as possible. We can also give you early access, maybe. And if a plus bus, you know, will stay around for the normal use cases, so if you just want a bus, you can still do it with AFA++. Thank you all for listening. We showed you the main fuzzing building blocks, and we showed you how we translated to our library right now, which will be out very soon. We think that we chose good defaults, and we will provide examples like a libfuzzer-like example that you can just use and adapt to your own harnesses. And so, you know, follow our GitHub project and us to know more about updates, and enjoy the rest of RC3, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much for your talk. And now let's have a look at the questions with Andrea and Dominic. Right now, as I see, there are no questions asked in the chat. So I have like two short questions that I would ask. And if you still have questions, we have a little bit of time. So please ask them right now and you will still get through with it. So the first question, you already somewhat asked it. So it seems to be possible to fuzz applications that aren't written in Rust, right?
Yes, totally. So the core is written in Rust, the library, but any place that you can link Rust against, which is almost anything, you can fuzz in the end.
Okay.
And the library is no standard lib, so you don't even need to have an operating system around it in the end.
Oh, okay. Cool. So you basically could also fuzz like embedded projects.
Yeah, for sure. That's part of the plan.
That sounds very good. And one more question for me is, right now you said you didn't release the source code. Is there like a place where we can update on the get updates on the status?
Yes. The status is as soon as it pops up on our GitHub.
Okay.
Maybe also the Discord channel. There is the fuzzing Discord channel. In which we usually post information and updates about the project.
Okay, so there's a special Discord channel.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we somehow can add it here. Maybe we could put it later down.
In the slides that we will release, we can put a link.
Yeah, okay. I see there are some questions coming in. I'll look at the pad if they're already sorted. No. I'll look directly in the IRC. So will the new thing be a tool or is it just a library?
Andrea?
It can be both. It is a library.
Okay.
And alongside the library, we will provide some default configurations, default tools that are can be built with a library that you can use as a tool, or you can use as a skeleton for your own tool that is based on the library.
Okay, great.
For example, right now we already have a libfuzzer clone running, so anything that takes LLVM, the standard LLVM input function that fuzzer people will know, you can already fuzz that using it's the library in the end. But
and we have QEMU also, executor that does fast snapshots, that is very fast and can be used to fuzz binary-only targets on Linux.
But the idea is that in the end, you write your own few lines of code to wrap it up and not have all the command line flags that you now specify for the existing fuzzing tools.
Okay, cool. Another question from the chat is, did you try it yet on bare metal systems?
Not that far yet. We know that it builds, but there are some things still left. For example, to use this LLMP message passing, you need some place that gives you a new shared map. And all this harnessing has to be done, and we've not tried it yet.
Okay. So one more question. I'm curious how pluggable mutators will be if I want to, for instance, tie in some more protocol grammar.
Yes, you can just, if you want to do structured fuzzing, the two components that you want to override is the input, because you need some representation of your structure that is not just a bad array. And the mutator is just, think about an object in any object-oriented programming languages. There is just define a new class and instantiate a new object of this mutator class. The difference is that we usually use generics, and classes are not a concept in Rust. There are traits that are quite similar, but not the same thing.
Okay. All right. I think right now there are no further questions. And yeah, so basically that sums it up. If you don't have anything left to say, I think we're done.
One more thing about this plugging in mutators. We thinking about making it possible also to write, prototyping in other languages, for example, Python, and then plug them in like a generic fashion. But then if you really want to do fuzzing in the end, you should definitely use a low level language instead, because the jump to Python is super slow. And
it is a long-term objective that we have to support Python, because yes, it's slow, but it's great for prototyping and experimenting a new fuzzer.
Okay, that sounds very good. All right, then I'll say thank you a lot again.
Thank you so much for hosting.
Thank you.
And thanks to all the guys on the tech team, all the guys on the RC3 team. You're awesome. And have a nice day and enjoy the rest of it. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The RC3.